I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News Paola Amaral and Audrey Bulger, who are inner city arts precinct city ward residents who are behind a recent online petition concerning publicly owned land in Fremantle. And let me first introduce Paola and Audrey, let them say hello, and then I'll tell you a little bit more about the petition. Good morning, Paola.
Hello, Michael.
Good morning, Audrey.
Hello, Michael.
Now, your petition concludes by saying, we are petitioning for a moratorium on the sale of our publicly owned land before it is too late. Let's stop this practice, which has contributed so much to social disadvantage and inequality. Now, your petition's up there online, and we'll tell people in a moment, if they would like to sign it, exactly how they find it to do that. And it's been given some publicity, but tell us a little bit more about it. How did this petition come about? Perhaps I can start with you, Paola.
It came about because the rise of poverty and lack of affordable housing in Fremantle has come to my attention. And when I started looking into it, I realized that this is something that we... Sorry, Michael. I need to think about...
Tell me this. It, at a very broad level, you draw attention to the fact that if in the petition municipal governments like the City of Fremantle are to sell off assets that they own, that they're gone forever and no longer have the opportunity to do what might
exactly,
be worthwhile things.
Exactly.
When it comes to housing, particularly for disadvantaged people or people with special needs or people who we generally describe as homeless, usually through economic circumstance, bodies like the City of Fremantle plainly, and private organisations around Fremantle plainly, try to rise to the challenge. But is there a particular development that's happened that caused you to get interested in this topic?
Yes, it was the Bert Street development in the Arts Centre precinct, and shall I
yes, go ahead.
Tell you, it started because I have an adult autistic son, and the Autism Association put in a request for some housing in that development, and when our children, our adult children in this particular group were assessed, we were told that even the 20% social housing that the department is retaining, it was too valuable and too expensive for people like us. And that got me a bit angry, and it made me start looking at what's going on and reading lots of articles online about the rise of poverty and the connections, you know, all over the world, not just in Australia, between privatisation and the loss of the opportunity for other forms of social housing. Or social housing is more to do, I think, with the state government. And there's other forms of affordable housing. I don't know if this is the correct term. And that is not coming from the private development. And then I wanted to know what my community thinks about it, so hence the petition. I also want to engage with the city so that we can have a conversation about this, because at the moment we're not having such a conversation. And the third thing was, I thought, yes, I'm aware of it, this is a global phenomenon, but I can't do anything about it, but I can maybe do something in my own community.
So initially, the petition, it sounds like this is the case, was driven by what you discovered when the request by the Autism Association fell on deaf ears with the redevelopment of the public-private Burt Street precinct development. Is that
yes.
So take the needs of autistic people, of which you obviously have first-hand experience. It sounds as though you thought that the association thought here was an opportunity in this public-private development to have accommodation set aside for people with autism.
Yes, but not just people with autism. There's a group of adults with autism who have a good degree of independence, supported independence, I should say, because there's parents and organization behind them. But these are people who don't drive cars, but need to catch public transport, but can do their own shopping, walk to the shops, have jobs, work. My son works in a kitchen in a restaurant at Pizza Bella Roma. So the need to be in an area that is familiar to him, where he has a network of people in the shops who know him, who look after him, I can say that. But to maintain that independence is crucial. If he goes to a suburb where he has no access to the shops, to public transport, then we're looking at funded accommodation with a carer 24/7 driving him every... I don't want that for him. I want him to keep that independence. Now, this group of parents, all our children are adults, very similar to my son, very similar cases, all living in this catchment, you know, Mosman Park, Fremantle around here. And these are all young adults that can have a certain independence, not be so dependent on services, but cannot live in the suburbs, because then it becomes impossible. Then they need a lot more care.
Now, sometimes social change happens because of a particular issue that gets somebody anxious and they push for change. Your petition is aimed directly at the city of Fremantle. It's not talking about the state government or the state government responsibilities through its Department of Housing or any other organisation. And you're wanting the Fremantle City Council to put a moratorium on the sale of publicly owned land. Am I right? It really is directed at the council, or are you intending...
Not just at the council, also at the state government.
Okay.
So my petition online, which is on change.org.com, it's for both the state government and the local government. Because, as I say in the petition also, some of the land is owned by the state government and some of the land is owned by the city.
Mm. And social housing is a responsibility of the state government. So, I mean, the council itself can't provide housing for people, but it could at least make land available so that housing could be built.
Like cooperative housing, like not-for-profit community housing, rather than only private ownership.
Well, let's just explore that a little bit. As I've understand what you've said, the current redevelopment in the Burt Street precinct, you consider doesn't meet the sort of needs that might be met. It has a 20% social housing allocation, apparently. Is that right?
So they say. So they told us.
But you're not sure just who finishes up benefiting from that allocation?
No, because having been told that it's too expensive for even the sort of request that we put in, it makes me wonder who else could afford an affordable social housing, if I can put it that way.
All right, well, that's a separate topic and question to be answered, who does fall within the social housing description, I suppose, or category. But your contention then is that there's a range of people with needs who, as in the case of your son, should be able to continue living near where they work and where their family and where their support is. And if public land, state or government, or I suppose for that matter Commonwealth, were to be sold off for entirely profit-driven purposes, private housing and the like, then what happens? Audrey, what do you think ought to be attempted in these circumstances? What would you like to see these governments do?
Well, I'd like to see them holding on to the land that's already owned by the council. We're talking about the council particularly here. But if they held on to the land and kept some sort of ownership of it, as we're told that it can be done, then you can have the public-private partnership where the land, much has been done in White Gum Valley, for instance. Development there has been done so that it's divided into different sort of housing that is available for people who wouldn't be able to afford it if it was developed by private developers. And that comes down to the fact of private developers expect to get a return of 20%, whereas otherwise, if it's done by non-profit, then it can be done at something like 7%, which is a huge difference. And it means it's money. You can make land then accessible, make housing accessible for low-income people or people with special needs.
Now, are there particular land holdings in and around Fremantle that you have in mind that might be redeveloped according to what Audrey's just described, Paula?
Well, we have one in Quarry Street, just down the road from us here on Quarry Street.
And in a way, that was another one that made us interested in this issue because...
This is the Quarry Street.
This is the Quarry yes. Street.
Now, whereabouts is that land?
What number is it, Paula?
It's three lots.
It's three lots,
and
yes.
It's closer to St. Patrick's Church, so
it's
that end of Quarry
Street.
And on that land, everything that was there on those three lots was of immense social value because there was the kindy and the toy library owned by the city, so it's all owned by the city. There was the youth social services. So there was, once they started demolishing and contacting the community, because the three lots are on three different types of zoning and they want to amalgamate and just put one single type of zoning, but then they want to sell it to private developers. So something that had a lot of social value now seems to only have private value, you know, financial value,
profit value.
And that got us worried too, because we know that it's possible for the city to retain the ownership of the land, but allow for instance, in the park, the clubs are building a brand new clubhouse, but they don't own the land. They came up with the money themselves.
This is on Allen Street.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. But the city still owns the whole of the land. So we thought we don't want to see the social value of the land just disappear like this. And as we said before...
This is in your petition?
It's just not disabled people. It's elderly people on very low incomes and young people. Most young people cannot live in the community where their parents live, you know, where they grew up. So that particular lot.
So it sounds like the Birch Street precinct development, in some ways, having this discussion, is a lost cause because it's quite advanced. Is that a fair way of looking at it?
It's not advanced at all.
It's not advanced.
No.
So you could seek a rethink of what's happening there.
Yes, and they have not said no to us completely. They've hinted but not said no. And in fact, we then decided to go to the highest authority we could possibly go, and we wrote directly to Peter Tinley.
He's the minister.
He's the minister. So we'll see. I'm not going to say it's all finished because it isn't yet. We'll see. You might need another interview in a few months' time about what's going to happen to Barrett Street.
Now, have you had any dialogue with, apart from writing to Mr. Tinley, and in particular with the council? Is the City of Fremantle interested to explore these ideas with you?
I wrote to the mayor and to our two elected members, Rachel Pemberton and Aideen Lang. Rachel was the one that answered me, and we had a meeting, and we've been talking about this. I think, knowing these three people the way I know them, and I know them reasonably well, I think that they will be willing to have that conversation with the community, which is really the start of things. If we're not talking, then, you know, it looks very antagonistic, but that's not my intention. My intention is to perhaps shift the mindset that has been going on for the last 30 or 40 years, which is, we don't need these, let's flog it off to private developers. It's to shift that mindset and for them to perhaps start a different conversation that might...
Can I just interrupt there? Sure. In that when we're talking about shifting the mindset, we see the actual city offices of this more of a problem. The councillors may be very willing to go along and think about it, but the city officers tend to have a set idea in their minds. For instance, in the Quarry Street one, they simply say, oh, the state government wouldn't allow this. And when you say, well, why don't we ask the state government, why don't we go ahead? Oh, no, it's not worth bothering. The state government will knock it back, so we might as well just assume that it won't happen.
And can I just explain? That's because the community is willing to have the city amalgamate the three lots, but wants an R60 zoning for it. And the officers, the planning officers, say we have to push for R80 because the state government will not accept anything less. And when we say that, but you should be advocating on behalf of what the community wants, but we cannot shift them on this because they don't want to advocate what we want. They want to push what's going to make more money for the city.
Well, let's just deal with that, Paula. Perhaps I could ask Audrey. We see some sentiment expressed about these sorts of issues, that governments everywhere just want to have a surplus budget. They don't want any debt. It's sort of a national issue in Australia at the moment and not confined to here. Is there any sympathy to be had for local governments, in this case Fremantle, if it's the case, trying to maximise the return on land that they own to ensure that there isn't any greater imposition on ratepayers?
Well, they think so because they have got quite a large debt, we gather, that nobody quite knows what, because of all the King's Square development and so on. So we can see where they're coming from. But we're not convinced that is should be the prime consideration of a city, just to, you know, to clear their debts. The land is too valuable for that, and so it should stay with the city so that it can be used for the community. It's community land. It's not just doesn't belong to the city officers or the city councillors. It belongs to all of us, and we should have some say in how it's used. And to do that, we need to retain it in city ownership.
All right. Let's then deal with this question to respond to precisely that proposition. You two have been instrumental in, as I said at the outset, launching this petition on change.org.com, and you can go in and find it, the publicly owned land in Fremantle petition. Now, that's a great way to develop community interest. Paula, how well has it gone so far? Have you got a few signatories?
The last time I checked, I had 261 signatures, although some people didn't bother to read and just jumped on the bandwagon, which is not very good. Like my sister, my cousin in Lisbon signed it.
Well, you want local residents who've got a stake in it.
Of course.
But that's nice to know. But it goes to show that the issue is not just a local one. It spans a number of oceans. Dangerous airspace to get to Lisbon. But what else are you planning in order to promote your concerns about the use of publicly owned land in the Fremantle area? Do you have anything else underway?
When we, and I mean not just myself, but my community, when we decide that we have enough signatures, that I'll stop the petition and have it printed out, and then we'll deliver it to the city and to the state government. The intention really is to start a conversation. I would like the community to engage in a constructive way so that we can find solutions, you know. We can find solutions for the best use of the land. Not all the land that is owned by the city is... I'm sure some of it maybe can be used for paying the civic debt, but others should be used for... We need to be able to access that information and have a discussion, you know, and find other creative solutions, you know, around the payment of the civic debt.
Now, I think the Birch Street development proposals involve, from what you've said, both state government and council.
No. Just state government.
Just state government.
Yeah, just state government.
Whereas the Quarry Street development that you've described is just local government. Audrey, you've mentioned some possibilities there. I mean, do you have a more developed idea as to how that council-owned land might be developed if you're talking about 80 versus 60 as the density control?
Well... Actually, I think Paula knows more about it than I do, really. I mean, we still think that it could be developed in as mixed sort of housing. Is that right, Paula?
Yes. Some members of the precinct actually mentioned that it would be an ideal spot, say, for elderly women on low incomes who don't have a husband anymore, maybe don't have enough super. So there's pockets of the community, groups, that might not qualify for social housing, but would certainly cannot also afford private development. So there's an in, to me, there's an in-between type of housing that is missing.
And some of them could be people who could afford to buy if it was at a reasonable price.
If it was subsidised,
yes.
Or built by not-for-profit organisations, that sort of thing, which I think would be ideal for local government land, because social housing is for state government, but this type of housing could be between the community... and some partnerships. We don't know. We need to explore all that.
Yes.
We have ideas, but...
Yeah. And well, that land is very important because it's ideally situated for people who need public transport, shops, I mean, everything is very, very accessible there. Train services, bus services, all the other services that people need, you know, doctors, hospitals, all the rest
of it.
Yes, all those things.
Yes, you can see why that particular portion of land, which is a reasonable size, could be developed to produce a number of living units, if I could put it that way.
Yes.
The challenges facing people promoting affordable, social, whatever descriptions one uses are obviously enormous. The simple thing to do is to advertise land, sell it for the highest price in a simple market and let developers do what they can do according to the zoning. And whatever happens, happens. But the problem with that you've each referred to can be that people who ought to be living, as Audrey's just put it, close to a range of services, given their circumstances, are forced to live much further away. Well, this is an issue which no doubt continues to challenge people, always has, as to whether you keep land in public ownership, whether you rely entirely on private development, the extent to which governments impose conditions of development in order to achieve desirable social and economic and political outcomes and environmental outcomes. But you, too, provide some sort of living example of how an issue becomes important in a small community, and you're doing something about it. Be very interesting to see where you get to, but when do you think you will have a sense of whether you keep pushing it? What are the key milestones, if you like, by which you will measure your progress, if not success? Paola?
Oh, that's a difficult one to answer.
I suppose it boils down to this. Do you give up at some point?
Ah. But we haven't reached that point yet. So I'm not about to give up now. No. Not about to give up until I come to such a point where I realise that I have to give up. And that has not come yet.
Audrey? It'll be going back to the precinct. That's the first thing when we decide what to do with the petition. Mm. And there are people there interested in this issue only. We're not the only two who are interested. So there'll certainly be a push from the precinct. How long we keep it up will, of course, depend on what sort of response we get. You know, that if we get interest from the city, and if we manage to persuade the city officers to look at it from a community point of view rather than a profit point of view, then I think we will keep on with it. But I wouldn't like to say how long for. We hope it won't be a case of how long for. We hope we will get some response in the meantime. Yes.
Well, look, thank you both very much for speaking with the Shipping News today. And we encourage people to go on to Change and have a look at the petition. And people listening to this and people interested in this topic will have their own views. But they can sign the petition online, Paola. That's the way it works.
Yes.
And you'd prefer people not to be in Lisbon, but to be here in Fremantle. And it'll go back to your precinct group before too long. Mm-hmm. And well, we'll watch with great interest. I think there's also some local government council elections coming up, aren't there?
Yes, that's correct. I normally, when the elections are on, we have a forum where the candidates come and all the residents come and ask questions, and there's a lively discussion and they can advocate on their behalf. And I was told, but not confirmed, that there's going to be one this Thursday evening. I'll have to find out from our convener whether that's correct or not. So yes, the elections are going to be a very good opportunity to discuss this topic and ask questions.
Well, thank you very much. We'll watch with interest this space to see how it develops. Thank you very much. Thank you, Audrey.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.